This spot is brought to you by Eaton Vance, the symbol of advanced investing. What's inside your ETF? With Parametric Equity Premium Income ETF, you know. Inside, you'll find institutional expertise from a specialized team with deep derivatives experience. Get to know what's inside PAPI, the symbol of alternative income, at eatonvance.com/symbols. Before investing, prospective investors should carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. The current prospectus contains this and other information and is available at eatonvance.com. Read the prospectus carefully before investing. Not FDIC insured. Offer no bank guarantee. May lose value. Not insured by any federal government agency. Not a deposit. Investments involve risk. Principal loss is possible. Distributed by Foreside Fund Services, LLC.
U.S. officials urge Israeli caution on a potential Gaza offensive as hostage diplomacy continues. Plus, Bitcoin rallies on hopes that U.S. regulators could approve an ETF that's pegged to the digital currency.
This could open a new frontier in the market where instead of holding crypto through an FTX or a Binance, you could hold it through a traditional financial institution that may well encourage people to put more money into the sector.
And House Republicans prepare to vote on their latest candidate for Speaker. It's Tuesday, October 24th. I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. American officials are urging Israel not to rush into a ground offensive in Gaza, telling their ally that Washington still needs time to put military assets in place and ready them for use in case of a wider escalation. Pushed by reporters, U.S. National Security Council spokesperson John Kirby said the U.S. wasn't telling Israel how or when to act.
It's our view that the Israeli Defense Forces, Steve, need to decide for themselves how they're going to conduct operations. We're not in the business of dictating terms to them, and we're certainly not going to be in the business here from the White House of previewing any future operations one way or the other. That would be inappropriate.
However, U.S. officials have said that Israeli patience would give Qatar more time to secure the release of additional hostages after the group said it released two hostages on humanitarian grounds yesterday. In a phone call with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu after those hostages were freed, President Biden separately communicated the need to, quote, sustain a continuous flow of urgently needed humanitarian assistance into Gaza. State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller said that Washington has also been looking for ways to help American citizens to leave Gaza via a border crossing with Egypt, including those who had attempted to depart in recent days.
None of them were able to because the reports we were given on the ground is that Hamas was there blocking anyone from coming through the gate from the Gaza side out to the Egyptian side. So we are not in direct conversation with Hamas, but we have been sending messages to Hamas through a number of partners. I think I'll leave it at that, that we do want to see American citizens able to leave through the Rafah crossing.
For continuing updates on the Israel-Hamas war, visit our live blog at WSJ.com. House Republicans are due to begin voting today on a potential speaker after candidates pitched themselves at a forum for House GOP members yesterday. Our Keith Collins spoke to congressional reporter Katie Stetch Farrick as the meeting wrapped up.
This was an opportunity for lawmakers to say what their vision is for the party. Of course, everyone is trying to convince their colleagues that they are capable of unifying. Republicans are so fractured right now, hence the issue before us. And so there are a lot of folks that are trying to explain why they're the right person to listen to all sides and bring people together so that Republicans can move forward and advance their conservative agenda on really important issues like budget cuts, spending cuts, on border security issues. There's a lot that they need to get done, especially on foreign aid. And there was a lot of strategy of how we get that done and how do we move forward on that process so that it's a little kind of different than what it is now.
Okay, and do we have a front runner yet, Katie? It seems like Majority Whip Tom Emmer could be a strong candidate.
Tom is definitely being heavily considered by a lot of folks as a very serious candidate. It's interesting, during previous rounds of voting, folks were really public with their endorsements, and it was pretty easy to get a handle early on of who had momentum and who had support from different folks. This time it feels a little different. There's support that appears to be pooling behind a handful of frontrunner candidates. Representative Emmer is one of them. We also have Kevin Hearn of Oklahoma, who has led the Republican Study Committee, which is a big group that a lot of Republicans are a part of to discuss legislative priorities. We also have Byron Donalds of Florida. He's kind of a rising star within the party. And another person that a lot of folks really seem to like, trust, and support is Representative Mike Johnson of Louisiana. He's the House Republican Conference Vice Chairman, and people seem to think that he has the shot at unifying everybody and bringing people together in a way that we haven't seen so far.
And Katie, it's interesting that while lawmakers aren't being public about their endorsements, former Speaker Kevin McCarthy has said he will support Tom Emmer. Is that welcome or could it be detrimental?
Oh gosh, you know, McCarthy, despite being ousted several weeks ago, is still a very influential and popular member of Congress and rather of House Republicans. And so I think that was a very welcome endorsement early on. And I should clarify too, we have had some support come out in small bits, endorsements here or there. For example, some of the Oklahoma guys got behind Hearn. He's from Oklahoma. There's a lawmaker, Representative Bergman from Michigan, who has the support from other Michigan Republicans. So we're seeing some support here and there, just nothing decisive yet.
So now that we know who's in the field, what are the next steps to finding the House Speaker?
On Tuesday, House Republicans will go into another meeting where they will begin voting on some of the candidates that have pitched to become speaker. And we are expecting several rounds of voting with so many candidates, and we don't know exactly what the format will be, but we're expecting that as folks get fewer and fewer votes, there will be dropouts, and we're hoping that we'll see sometime this week and hopefully Tuesday some support behind one or two candidates, enough for one of them to at least get momentum and the confidence that they can get 217 on the floor, which is the number of votes that you need if all lawmakers are present.
That was the Journal's Katie Stech-Ferrick speaking to our Keith Collins. Coming up, Bitcoin jumps, Chinese stocks sink, and can steel go green? We've got those stories and more after the break.
This spot is brought to you by Eaton Vance, the symbol of advanced investing. What's inside your ETF? With Parametric Equity Premium Income ETF, you know. Inside, you'll find institutional expertise from a specialized team with deep derivatives experience. Get to know what's inside PAPI, the symbol of alternative income, at eatonvance.com/symbols. Before investing, prospective investors should carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. The current prospectus contains this and other information and is available at eatonvance.com. Read the prospectus carefully before investing. Not FDIC insured. Offer no bank guarantee. May lose value. Not insured by any federal government agency. Not a deposit. Investments involve risk. Principal loss is possible. Distributed by Foresight Fund Services, LLC.
Bitcoin has rallied more than 10%. Briefly reaching $35,000 and fueling wider gains among other digital coins. Crypto reporter Angus Berwick says that Bitcoin's sudden rise comes amid signs that an exchange-traded fund investing directly in the cryptocurrency could soon be approved in the United States.
A federal appeals court issued a mandate that the SEC has to reconsider an application by the crypto asset manager Grayscale to convert its Bitcoin trust into an exchange-traded fund. This means that this case has effectively been closed, and markets are really rallying around this as a sign that major firms' kind of ETF applications might actually bear fruit.
And Angus told us that such ETFs could make cryptos a lot easier to invest in going forward.
The crypto industry has been beaten down quite a bit over the past year. There was the collapse of FTX and major concerns about the stability and management of the other major players in the industry, for instance, Binance, which is the largest exchange. And that's taken a toll on the price of Bitcoin and other tokens. So the fact that this could open a new frontier in the market where instead of holding crypto through an FTX or a Binance, you could hold it through a traditional financial institution. BlackRock and Fidelity have their own separate ETF applications that are ongoing. From a consumer point of view, that may well encourage people to put more money into the sector because obviously these are players that they can trust.
From crypto highs, let's shift to Chinese lows as one of the country's benchmark stock indexes, the CSI 300, closed yesterday at its lowest level in more than 4 years. International investors have now pulled more than $5 billion from mainland Chinese markets this month, according to data provider Wind, bringing foreign outflows to $22 billion since August alone. And Asia Markets reporter Weilun Sun told me that Chinese investors, of which there are around 200 million, don't seem keen about onshore markets either.
For example, you have the looming property sector crisis, which really impacts how confident these retail investors are for the future, because property is seen as another channel for them to create wealth. And then even though geopolitical tensions tend to be impacting global investors more, you hear of state-backed media saying over the weekend that Beijing authorities are investigating Foxconn, which is one of the largest maker of Apple's iPhones. So this just puts more concern in the hearts and minds of retail investors as to what the country's economic future is like when you have geopolitical tensions.
And Weilun, authorities are intervening on this now. They've made it harder to bet against stocks. China's sovereign wealth fund has also been buying up shares in Chinese stocks, $65 billion worth, being invested in four Chinese banks earlier this month, and then more money put into ETFs yesterday. What is the goal of all this, and is it working?
So this is viewed by market participants that it's Beijing trying to inject further confidence into the stock market. But in my conversations with fund managers today, they still think that it's kind of a piecemeal approach. It's too small to really have a larger effect on the market, and it actually makes them wonder even more. What else is there that the country can do to shore up further confidence? And again, we also need to look at the GDP numbers that were released last week. Some of those data appear to be better than expected, but still the market has been on this continued slide. And if we think about investing in stocks, it's retail investors buying into future expectations. It's looking pretty bleak for them.
Meanwhile, economic activity in the Eurozone has unexpectedly contracted at a faster rate than forecast. Output declined steeply in October while demand faltered, according to the latest Purchasing Managers survey, which fell to 46.5, its lowest level in just under 3 years. That reading further complicates matters for ECB policymakers who've been hiking interest rates in a bid to stem inflation in the Eurozone. The rise in borrowing costs already seems to be hitting Europe particularly hard, with today's reading adding to 3 months of declines in output. On the upside, however, Europe is leading the charge in making one of the world's most polluting industries, steel, green. By 2030, the continent is expected to be home to nearly 50 green and low-carbon steel projects, compared to only two such projects that are planned in the U.S. High customer demand for low-carbon steel is partly driving the push, but WSJ Commodities reporter Yusuf Khan told us that another major contributing factor is the Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism, or CBAM, which entered a trial phase this month.
It's essentially a tax on importers trying to import quite dirty products like cement and steel and things like that. And it means that if you want to import these products into the EU, if your country doesn't have an equal carbon tax, they're going to tax you quite heavily for it. If you do have it, then it's okay. But it means that you're kind of basically saying, well, to bring in all these materials, you're going to have greener products. If not, you will have to pay the price, essentially, a big premium. So it's kind of forced both the industry in Europe and also industries outside of Europe to fall in line with the greener approach.
And millions of Americans can look forward to cheaper heating bills this winter due to abundant natural gas reserves and expectations of a milder winter. Around 60 million U.S. households heated with natural gas should see their winter bills drop by 21% to around $600. That said, homes heated by electricity should expect to pay the same amount as last year, while those dependent on heating oil will likely pay a bit more. And that is What's News for Tuesday morning. Today's show was produced by Mohsen Ali and Kate Bullivant. Our supervising producer is Sandra Kilhoff. And I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal. We will be back tonight with a new show. Until then, thanks for listening.